You cannot lead with your emotion. You can't lead with your heart. It's got to be all about the math, and you really have to be very, very disciplined. Or instead of buying low and selling high, which is what everyone wants to do, and that's how you make money, you buy high and sell low, or buy high and sell high. You may not make as much or nothing. So you want to be very, very disciplined.
Is about more than just a regular gym routine. When was the last time you checked on your financial fitness? If you're feeling like you're falling behind, Ed Sedell is here to help with The Retirement Trainer, a podcast about helping you get into better financial shape. Every week, Ed talks about things you need to know to become more financially fit for your future. Learn about things like how much money will you need, financial mistakes other people often make, and how you can avoid them. Plus, details on The Retirement Fitness Plan, a plan Ed personally created to help you get to and through retirement by focusing on five key areas of your financial life. Learn more about The Retirement Fitness Plan when you visit egsifinancial.com and click on Processes. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer.
It's The Retirement Trainer with Ed Sedell, a podcast about finding ways to help you become financially fit for your future, no matter what financial shape you're in now. What does the Iran conflict, oil, gas prices, IPOs, new Fed chair, and the impact of all of this have on both interest rates, the economy, and the cost of living for Americans? This is Leanne Sedell, and here to help us with all our questions and to give us the best financial shape possible, Ed Sedell. Hi, Ed.
Wow. Leanne, you know what? It's been a long time.
Too long.
It's been too long. So I'm excited to do this. There's a lot of stuff going on.
Absolutely. And me being a podcast listener and liking listening to podcasts, I find that I like getting right into the meat of it.
Into the meat of it. Yeah. Let's not mess around.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So there's a lot of stuff going on. The Iran conflict, the impact that that's having on really an awful lot of stuff.
Yeah.
We've had a lot of questions and calls regarding IPOs, SpaceX. Just in case no one's ever heard of it, right? The new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh, inflation, cost of living. You know, I just saw today on the news, it was on Bloomberg, and I think I saw it again on Fox Business, the increase year over year of different costs. And it was, you know, mortgage costs have gone up 20%, interest rates have gone up over 35%. Guess what has gone up 72% year over year? It's a quiz. You didn't know you were getting one of these, did you?
Yeah, no.
Related to home costs.
Property taxes? I don't know.
No, actually, this was actually more than property taxes. Homeowners insurance.
Oh, you know what? I should have been able to get that one.
And taxes have gone up. I can't remember what it was. I think it was less than 40%. It was still significantly, but 72%? Homeowners insurance? I mean, think about that. So everyone thinks that the cost of owning a home is relegated to the mortgage and the interest. Well, it's the taxes, right? Remember, you'll own nothing and like it. You can have your house paid for, but if you can't pay your property taxes and your homeowners insurance, I mean, then what happens?
Yeah, but it's the different ways that they hit you with that. First, they do a reassessment and they tell you that that your house is now worth $100,000 more than it was worth 6 months ago. And then they hit you with an increase for random stuff, whether it be a levy or whether it be for firemen's. I don't care what it is. There's always an increase. But the reassessment is the part that I think really hits people hard is, okay, they're double hitting you. They're literally double hitting you.
It is. Well, so really, when you think about it, it's kind of like taxing on unrealized gains.
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, it really is.
Yes. Yes.
So, well, okay. So that's a whole nother subject that we can unpack. But I just saw that. I thought that was so interesting that the cost of insurance is being so high and people don't even think about that. So the affordability, it said that there's now in excess of 25 million Americans, adults, 35 and under, now living in their parents' homes because they can't afford even the cost of rent. It's just so out of touch.
Well, and weren't you the one that we were talking about, the basically state line, our ability to be competitive is being able to go across state? Yeah.
Interstate, yes. Interstate commerce as it relates to, you know, all types of insurance, including healthcare. And I'll tell you what, if we had the ability to have interstate commerce as it related to healthcare, the prices would drop. I mean, there'd be a whole host of things that would need to happen, but, you know, competition, right? So, all right, so let's talk about the Iran conflict as it relates to the economy, oil and gas prices. So we did hit a high of in excess of $120 a barrel. So today is June 22nd, and right before we came in here, oil had dropped to $73 a barrel.
Yeah.
And isn't it amazing how as soon as gas hit, or I mean, as soon as oil, crude oil hit $90 a barrel, $95, $100, it was parabolic. It was a hockey stick straight up in the air. Gas prices jumped almost $2 a gallon plus. And now oil is almost down to where it was before the Iran conflict. It's actually, I think it's $1 or $2 a barrel less, and it's still close to $4 a gallon.
Yeah, we're still.
For regular unleaded, not even premium.
Coming home yesterday, I was excited to see $3.89 off the freeway. And you're right, how fast it went up and how slow it's coming down, it's actually causes you to go,
What makes you go, right?
Yeah.
That is the pain at the pumps, the affordability for Americans. We were just talking about insurance, and it's not just homeowners, it's automobile insurance. But boy, that's an immediate pain point when you go to buy gas. And I remember it wasn't all that long ago, you know, we were paying almost $5 a gallon for gas. And then when I saw it at Costco for $3.68, I was so excited. And then I'm like, what is wrong with me? I'm excited to pay $3.68 a gallon for gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's when our kids, again, when you're talking about people that it hits us all very hard, but
it does.
Paying $5, I cannot even fathom it. And I think that's California's like normal is $5.
No, they're over $6.50.
Okay.
Chicago, I was just talking to someone in Chicago during an interview, and I think when we were paying $3.68, it was still $5.60 mm-hmm. something a gallon. And so that is the affordability impact on Americans all the way across the board. There's some food prices have come down, but a lot of other things have gone up because we are a petroleum-based society. How do goods and services happen? Well, it's through transportation, whether it's through gasoline or diesel products, and pharmaceuticals are petroleum-based. So everything that we use are clothes.
Yeah, but let's go to services, because now you've got all these people that are now charging fuel surcharges just because they have to drive to that service. And you're watching these, I'm going to use handymen as an example, but they're having to up their prices
yeah.
substantially just to be able to get back to even again. These guys don't charge very much for their services, but when you're paying $5 a gallon or $4.50 a gallon, and I don't think it's a stretch to have people realize that, but sometimes the reminder is, gosh, they're driving all over town from appointment to appointment. How many gallons of gas do they go through in a given day? But anyway.
I mean, to that point, right? Historically, so prices go up as it relates to gas and diesel parabolically, and it takes, unfortunately, 2 months for it to come back down. So
I hope 2 months.
Yeah. You know, hopefully by Labor Day before. We'll really start seeing prices come down back to the norm, you know, under $3 and back to where it was, maybe around $2.50, $2.60. And I think everybody'd be pretty excited about that because that's a huge impact when you're adding a couple extra $100 a month, not a year, but a month to your budget. And it's already a struggle as it is. And then once that happens, you're really going to start to see prices all the way across the board kind of normalize. And that's going to be a big deal. So now we're not going to get into politics. Is the deal going to go through or not go through? You know, we're just going to focus on what we know. And so based on that, you know, we're starting to see prices come down significantly all the way across the board.
You can't even watch the market from the beginning to the end of the day. Because if you watch it in the beginning of the day and you think it's like kicking off 500 points up, it could be back to even by the time the market closes. I also want that to be a caution.
Yeah, it's that volatility, right? And we could talk about the PE ratios today, too, because that does have a huge bearing on earnings and risk in the market and everything else. But, you know, let's go back to the cost of petroleum, because that really has a big impact on the new Fed chair, Kevin Warsh.
Mm-hmm.
So he's an inflation hawk, which means he really believes in controlling inflation, reducing the Fed balance sheet. At least that's what he testified to, all right, during the Senate hearings when he was approved. And we saw inflation hit the highest that it's been since 2023. And that's a big deal. But really, when you take out all of the costs as it relates to fuel, petroleum, it really isn't that high. It's still higher when somebody says, well, you know, inflation, it's all the way back down to whatever it is, 2.5%. Well, what that means is it's still growing at a rate of 2.5% per year, right? Year over year. So it's still growing and things are getting more expensive. But when you're seeing inflation over 4%, that's a big number. When you're seeing it pushing 5%, that's a big number. But a lot of it, because remember, petroleum-based society, so that those fuel costs, that pressure transcends and it's affecting all goods and services all the way across the board, like the example that you used with handymen and a lot of service industries all the way across the board. So as those fuel prices come down, we're going to see the producer price index come down. We're going to see CPI, which is inflation, come down all the way across the board. And the good thing about this, what we're seeing based on the jobs numbers, even with all of this, the economy is still strong and resilient. The market is still strong and resilient. So let's talk about P/E ratio. Everyone tries to make it so complicated. It is not complicated. The P/E ratio is the cost of what a company is when you buy their stock, right? So that's the price versus the earnings, what a company makes, right? And it's that ratio. So historically, the sweet spot is 18. Historically, it's a little over 16. If you look it up online, it's, you know, it says that the average should be between 15 and 20. The higher that P/E ratio is, the more volatility we see in the market. Right now, I don't know what it is this week, but through the end of May, the P/E ratio for the S&P 500 was over 30. I think it was 31. And that's a good sign. As high as that is, it had actually come down because the beginning of May, it was almost 33. Now, there's what's called the CAPE ratio or the Shiller index, the Shiller P/E ratio, and that's what's adjusted for inflation. That's a really, really big deal because if you look at what the P/E ratio based on the CAPE index was in the beginning of May, it was just shy of 43, and it's come down to 41 and change below 42. So it's heading in the right direction. The reason that that's so important is the only two times it was higher in history was the tech bubble, which everyone's comparing now to then, and I'll explain why it's different, and then the Great Depression. So look, first of all, I want to clear up, I'm not saying the sky is falling and everyone needs to go to cash. That's not what I'm saying at all. It's just, these are things that you really need to keep an eye on. But the reason that it's important for to differentiate between now and the tech bubble and the Great Depression, it's earnings. So when you had IPOs coming out, especially during the tech bubble, most of these companies, they were negative. They were upside down. They had negative sales. They lost money every year and they still had an IPO. And it was FOMO, people, the fear of missing out. And they were buying in at ultra high prices and these companies were not profitable. What we're seeing now is, I don't want to say completely different, but significantly different. These companies have earnings. You know, you look at NVIDIA, across the industry as a whole, earnings have beat expectations two times what was expected.
Yeah, you could talk about Intel.
Well, look at, yeah, Intel, NVIDIA. You know, there's a lot of companies, the standards, right? Apple, Microsoft, Amazon. And you've got a lot of these startup companies that are not really startups that have been doing this for a long, long time, to include SpaceX, right? Which, well, I know you want to talk about the IPO, but they have earnings. I'm not saying SpaceX does.
I guess where I want you to dial in is just to talk a little bit. That's in the next part of this, but if we're going to talk about IPOs, let's talk about what makes sense in a retirement plan as it relates to people getting invested in an IPO. Because again, it's all about risk.
But again,
finish what you were going to say as far as earnings are concerned.
Well, because earnings are positive, that's really what you want to see. Now, are stocks overvalued? Yes, right? According to the math and what we're seeing, they are. However, I think over the next couple of years, we're really starting to see these AI companies and AI related in that tech, including data centers all the way across the board, that infrastructure is being built. There's going to be a point, whether it's 4 or 5 years down the road, that they may hit a ceiling. But right now, they're meeting demands, they're exceeding expectations, and the earnings are there. So from a risk-adjusted standpoint, as it relates to portfolios, you need to make sure that when you're investing, it needs to be adjusted to the risk that you're in. And we call it the pillow test. You know, how much money are you okay losing in your portfolio and you can still sleep at night? And I tell everyone, well, you know, you could say zero. A lot of people say, yeah, I don't want to lose anything. And you have others that say, oh, you know what? I'm super aggressive. Oh, okay, so then you can lose half. Oh, no, I don't want to lose half. Like, well, what's super aggressive? You know, let's just say if it's $1 million portfolio, so you're okay losing $500,000? No way. Well, $250,000? No, I'm not comfortable with that at all. Well, $100,000? I think I'd be okay with $100,000. Well, so that's 10%. It's still $100,000. But when you start talking in dollars instead of percentages, it becomes a little bit more real. And then all of a sudden people are like, well, yeah, you know, I'm not as aggressive as I thought.
Well, and again, looking at the market as a whole, where those big cliff jumping losses have happened in the market, people can lay their hands on the amount, right? They can say, oh my gosh, that very rarely happens. But we're watching a lot of that volatility go on a regular basis.
We are. Yeah. I mean, from day to day, I think it was last week. It's hard. I can't even remember, but it was almost like a 1,000-point swing from pre-market
that
open.
That was the Friday before. Was it the Friday before?
Yep. So it was almost a 1,000-point swing.
Yep.
You know, and then it goes the other way a couple days later. So, and a lot of that has to do with algorithmic trading, and it's hitting these different points, and all of a sudden the computers just, you know, they sell or they buy because they're hitting different points, which is why things are moving at such a rapid pace.
Well, and again, as we're relating it to people in retirement, people are drawing off those accounts. So when you're drawing off accounts like that, maybe you can elaborate a little bit more. And the market takes a dump like that as they're liquidating funds for distributions. This is not back to even again. You're not getting back to even again.
Well, that's why having the right investment philosophy is so important. I mean, ours is safety, income, and growth, yep. Right? You've got to have money set aside for safety so that no matter what the market does, you've got your emergency fund set aside. You know, the income, which is your conservative bucket, is it just Social Security? Are you getting Social Security and a pension, which is really nothing more than annuity, structured notes, interest income, dividend income, rental income, oil and gas, whatever that is, right? And then you have the growth bucket, which is really stock market, stocks, bonds, exchange traded funds, mutual funds. And you could have real estate in there too, and oil and gas, but that's the high risk. And so it really becomes based on what's important to you. What is the outcome? Because safety, income, and growth is nothing more than a math equation. That's really all it is. And you want to make sure that you have enough in safety and income to weather the storm. Right? I mean, that's really what it is. So when the market's going up and down, you can enjoy life, do life, say yes to the things that you've always wanted to say yes to, do on your bucket list, and not have to sell those assets like you were talking about at a loss just to be able to maintain your lifestyle, and then eventually you run out of money. So that's what you don't want to have happen. So that's why having the right investment philosophy is really important, number one, and understanding your risk, right? Taking that test that we have everyone take each and every year, and then asking the questions, because sometimes the outcome of that risk assessment is different than the answers that they give us when we talk to them. Just having that conversation. What is it that you want to do? What's the purpose of the money? If money were no object, what would you do?
And it's interesting now, those risk assessments, that sometimes they can seem incredibly intrusive. And even the phrasing of those questions.
They do.
But there's a method to the madness. So
no, you're right. You're right. You have to look at everything as a tool. And what is, at the end of the day, what do you want to have happen and what's the outcome, right? And then how do you get to it? So that's the plan. The plan is the outcome that you want, right? And the strategy is how you manage that plan. You know, how do you get to that point and make sure that you're able to do that, no matter what it is, from investments to income, long-term care, taxes, whatever it is.
All right. That's where I'm going to pivot you now, because I do want to go back to IPOs.
Yes.
I'm going to come from the very amateur side of things because, again, I have really never been, I'm not going to say I've not been interested in it, but for me, I do think that IPOs are one of those things where wait till things settle down, and that's always been, but I am extraordinarily conservative and always have been my entire life. So I want you to explain to the everyday investor, like, how does it work? Specifically as it relates to SpaceX, which is a little bit different than common IPOs, but go back and just give a little.
It is and it isn't, right? A lot of the rules apply, but an IPO is an IPO, so it's initial public offering. So that's when it goes public for sale to the everyday person, whether it's in your brokerage accounts, IRAs, and soon after the IPO and things settle down, it'll start to go into ETFs and mutual funds, and you know, everyone's going to have it in their 401ks and IRAs and everything else. Even if they're not directly invested in it, it's going to be in those exchange traded funds and mutual funds. All right. So the misnomer, because we were getting calls for months ahead, hey, you know, I want to get in on SpaceX. There's this exchange traded fund. They're investing directly in SpaceX. The problem is that they weren't investing directly into SpaceX. Some of those ETFs, they were investing into companies that may or may not have been working with SpaceX or a supplier of SpaceX. So it was indirectly linked to SpaceX. It wasn't a part of a pre-IPO, right? So that was the gamble there. To get into a pre-IPO like a SpaceX, you've got to go through the market maker, the companies that are actually sponsoring the IPO. And there's usually a couple of them, especially one of this size and magnitude.
BlackRock, for instance, that did
so Goldman, much. Morgan Stanley, right? Whoever it is. Endowments, school endowments were invited in. So it's people with lots and lots of money, not your everyday investor, even with
Fidelity doing their nonsense with the $2,000 lowering their amount. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. Or those with $5 or $10 million may not even be invited, right? It's got to have significantly more than that. So what everyone's talking about now is, well, if I had gotten in on the IPO, I could have gotten out right away when it was over $220, $230. And that is a misnomer because there's what's called a lockup period. When you're involved in a pre-IPO early stages, you can't sell your shares. You're locked in. You're locked in. So a lot of times, depending on what stage you got in, whether it's an angel, a B round, a C round, or a D round, right, whatever that is, there's different lockup periods, and you're limited to selling certain shares and certain amounts of shares starting at 90 days. And then usually, I'm using SpaceX as an example, so it's 90 days, and then after 180 days, they can fully sell all their shares. So when people say, well, I want to get in, you know, you want to wait for, you know, start looking at 90 days and then after 180 days, because it's supply and demand, right? People are liquidating their shares because of profit taking, because now they're allowed to, so they're going to take profits. And now it floods the market or it increases the shares in the market, we'll just say that. And so prices drop. And that's typically what we see, you know, 6 to 12 months, you know, you see a decrease in that price. And then that's typically when you buy back in. I mean, just look back at Facebook. That's probably a great example. 6 to 12 months in, the price really dropped, and now look at it. So I think SpaceX is probably going to be a really good deal and a great buy long-term. It's a long-term hold, but now's probably not the best time to buy it, even for us personally, as well as for our clients. I mean, we're looking at 6 to 12 months down the road. That's when it's going to make sense to buy it. So it's rules-based investing, right? You cannot lead with your emotion. You can't lead with your heart. It's got to be all about the math, right? And you really have to be very, very disciplined. Or instead of buying low and selling high, which is what everyone wants to do, and that's how you make money, you buy high and sell low, or buy high and sell high. And you may not make as much or nothing. So you want to be very, very disciplined.
I think in this day and age where media plays so much of a pivotal role in the way in which these companies go crazy. I mean, it's interesting to watch the buildup to SpaceX. It was like media frenzy. Like, this was the focus, and it did its job, right? It did its job, meaning everybody was excited about it. Everybody was sitting on the edge of their chair trying to figure out what the actual price that it was going to settle at. And we're all still waiting for that. But it has been a roller coaster. Up to this point, it has.
Well, it's down 11, almost 11% today, right before we started the podcast. I think it was 165 and change. It, you know, it opened at 135 and took off like a rocket ship, no pun intended. And it really did. And now it's starting to settle down, and we're going to see some ebbs and flows. And probably after 90 days, we'll really start to see it kind of settle down a little bit, and it'll take off because people are going to buy some of those shares. They're going to gobble them up right away. But then after 180 days, after that 6-month lockup period has ended, you're going to see people not getting rid of all of them, but you're going to see a lot more shares hit the market because of that. And, you know, that's when you're going to start seeing some good deals.
Okay. On to the next thing. Let's just go back and talk about what you foresee happening again with interest rates, just to close things out.
So there was a Fed meeting last week, last Wednesday, and there were predictions that we're going to see rate increases, right? And it had more to do because of everything was so inflationary. We saw inflation approaching 5% on the CPI, Consumer Price Index. The PPI, Producer Price Index, was higher as well year over year, but a lot of that was based on oil prices and fuel cost. So as oil prices drop, right, that's a temporary thing, all right, because as oil prices drop, the cost of everything goes down and it becomes disinflationary. And so Kevin Warsh, even though he's an inflation hawk, He basically said, you know, we're just going to hold steady and we're just going to wait and see, not making any decision. You're right. I say all the time, cooler heads prevail. I don't foresee a rate increase this year. And honestly, I'm not sure at this point I even see a rate decrease. But if you look at the bond market is really what's telling you what's going on. We saw bonds, the 20-year and 30-year bond market, go super high in March and really in April going into May. And that meant the 15 and 30-year mortgage rates went higher, even though the prime interest rate, the Fed rate, the federal funds rate was lower. Yeah, you know, it was the capital markets, the bond market, that was dictating, well, no, interest rates are going to be a little bit higher. And we've really seen those settle down and actually come down a little bit. So I'm more interested in that than really what the Feds are going to do, because it's the markets that are going to dictate what people are going to be paying for interest rates. And as the bond markets see that oil prices come down, fuel prices come down, the cost of everything comes down, I think it's going to settle and we're going to see rates back in the fives. As long as oil prices continue to drop or at least stay steady, basically where they were in January, February.
Okay, well, I think we're going to wrap it up here. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to reach out to us. You can contact us at info@egsifinancial.com. You can give our office a call at 614-526-4118, or you can reach us through our email at www.egsifinancial.com. Thanks, Ed.
Thanks, Leanne.
You tested your fitness level, not your workout routine. I'm talking about your financial endurance. Because if saving to a 401k is the extent of your effort, it is time for you to start shaping up. And Ed Sedell is here to help you do that with The Retirement Trainer. It's his podcast to help you examine your financial stamina and learn the questions you should be asking and areas to focus on to help you get to that place you've been working so hard for, a happy, comfortable retirement. And it's not as hard as some might have made you believe. Ed's broken it down into 5 simple steps. It's the retirement fitness plan, which he personally created to help clarify key areas of your financial life. Learn more about the retirement fitness plan at egsifinancial.com. Then subscribe, follow, and listen to The Retirement Trainer on Apple Podcasts, your iHeart app, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. Investment advisory services offered through EGSI Investment Management, DBA EGSI Financial Group, a registered investment advisor. Insurance and annuities offered through EGSI Financial Services, Inc., Ohio License Number 102-06-19.